the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, right here, 720 WGN. Richard Roper is here and is off today. Steve Stone joins us on the Super Celebrity Hotline in just a second here. As the White Sox took 3 of 5 from the Kansas City Royals, including in the first half of a doubleheader on Saturday. They kicked a little Royal Keister, is what I would say. Right about there.
Yeah.
The bats are coming alive. I want to ask you this question, because this is an important one, Steve. I think a lot of people, especially, you know, fans didn't want to go out to the parks, even, you know, even Cubs fans, you know, who are like, you know, maybe this is their one chance all year to be able to go out there, weren't going.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, because it was so cold. How much of an impact does that have on these players?
Well, think about a couple of different things. You know, this isn't football. It's not basketball or hockey, which is played in climate control, although hockey's a little cooler, quite obviously, but it's a finesse game. Yes, it takes strength, but it's a finesse game. You have to feel your hands. It's very important. It's not like a big, gigantic defensive lineman who just throws the other lineman aside and goes and tackles a ball carrier. When you're trying to grip a baseball that's a little over 5 ounces and you're trying to throw it 100 miles an hour and you're trying to throw it in a teacup, if you can't feel your hands for any reason, there's going to be a problem. Guys are going to get hit. Pitchers are going to give up runs. A hitter who hits a fastball right in on his hands might be singing to him for another 3-4 innings. And so the conditions are awful, and I think every major league manager will tell you the same thing. The game was never invented to be played in weather conditions like this. But look, this centers into the act of God clause, because there's nothing you can do about the weather. We've tried in Chicago for many years complaining about it. It doesn't work. It's just, it is what it is, and unfortunately this year, the weather has been awful, primarily throughout the country, and you're playing in those conditions, so it's very difficult. There's no consistency to be had. The greatest example probably is Lucas Giolito. Giolito, last year when he came up, was brilliant through 7 games. In spring training, one of the few guys to have really an outstanding curveball in Arizona. You just don't find that too often. And yet, early in the season, he had no curveball whatsoever. He had no feel. He had no touch. He was throwing the ball well wide of the plate with all of his pitches. It wasn't just his curveball. He couldn't hit with his fastball either. But he's a California kid, and he's a guy who understands the finesse of the game. Although he's got a good fastball, he has to have the off-speed pitches to be successful, as most pitchers do. And I think it affects everybody, and certainly affects the fans. Why would you go out in a situation where your wind chill factor is in the 20s? This isn't an endurance test. It's supposed to be fun. Fans are supposed to have fun coming to the ballpark. You can't have a lot of fun when you have icicles dripping from your nose and when getting to the concession stand is arduous because you can't feel your feet or your knees. And so that's exactly what the fans have been going through. I don't blame them for staying away. I mean, we'd love to see them there, and I think it helps the ball club when they are there. But the conditions have been awful, and it's reflected in attendance throughout the league. Yes, there are places who draw in cool climates like Toronto because they have a dome. What a nice thing. But they don't draw. They haven't drawn in Minnesota all that well because, again, the weather conditions have been awful. So, you know, let's give the fans and everybody else kind of a pass, give some of the players a pass. Yeah, some guys are off to good starts, but a lot of those guys either play or they visited the West early or the South. They visited that early, and they were able to play in pretty good conditions.
Steve, I want to ask you a little bit, like what Ro alluded to with the Tim Anderson and the, you know, the celebration and some of the Royals taking umbrage and the White Sox overall. Now, listen, it's very different, as you well know, from when you played. Guys now, you know, you're 27 games out in August and the team wins a game, a walk-off homer, and they mob the, you know, the whole team mobs the guy at the plate and they act like they won the World Series. But with the White Sox, it almost seems to be the next level. They clearly are having a lot of fun with each other, but they're even horsing around sometimes during pitching changes, the over-celebrating. I mean, do you feel that they're skirting to the edge of doing too much of that for a team that's really got a lot to learn and is, you know, off to a rocky start?
No, they do have a lot to learn. I will grant you that. But as far as over-celebration, let's just take that isolated instance that was the Tim Anderson leadoff home run, and let's analyze what happened. So he hits a home run. Sox have been crushing the Royals. The Royals are off to a ridiculous start. They're last in the league. The only thing stopping the Sox from being last in the league is the Royals and the domination of the Royals so far in the early going. So you got a ball club that's really down. And the Royals are a proud team. I mean, there's a lot of these guys, and Salvi said it too. You know, we've got our World Series. Mm. He also didn't say they came one game away from that second World Series that was the year before. Mm. So this is a proud team that has been decimated by a number of different things, defections of Eric Hosmer, and you can't blame him for going to San Diego. That's kind of nice out there. Mm. But they've lost a lot of players. They've lost a lot of that bullpen that made Ned Yost into a really good manager. Because he was a push-button manager, he could manage for six innings, turn it over to the pen, and they won. Well, that isn't there anymore. And so that ball club was getting crushed, and I believe that Salvi Perez did that because, number one, he's the leader of the team. Number two, he wanted a way to get his team to rally. And how was he going to do it? He was going to pick on one thing, and maybe it wasn't conscious on his part. You know, I'm going to wait for one thing, and then I'm going to pounce on that. But he had the golden opportunity because Tim, number one, loves the game, and he has a zest for the game, and he is very vocal. But he didn't throw it in Salvi's face, and he rounded the bases, and he was exuberant. But again, he didn't point to any Royals. He didn't say, you know, to the pitcher, you know, I got you, throw that in there, I'll get you again, that kind of thing. And when he crossed the plate, he wasn't even looking at Salvi. In fact, what he did was he tapped his chest protector, if you looked at the pictures. And then Salvi started the dialogue at the plate. This was entirely done by Salvi. And when they were out at second base, quite frankly, they were just talking. Salvi had his point. He was a little animated. Tim had his point because Tim has always said, I'm not going to back down from anybody. And so that's just the nature of the game. Tim has fun in the game. I think Salvi was trying to make a point to his teammates. I don't even think he was trying to make it Salvi was trying to make a point to his teammates, not Tim. And so it just was a convenient time to rally his troops. And as a true leader, they won two more ball games. They won the final two games of the series after losing three straight. So from this point of Salvi Perez, that worked. There was no harm, no foul. But a greater situation here, guys, is this whole idea of people streaming in gradually from both the dugouts and the bullpens. This is absurd. This is one of the most ridiculous things that baseball puts up with, and I can't understand it because it's an easy fix and they could do it tomorrow. Third man in rule. Mm-hmm. First, if he's the third man in, you get suspended. Pick out a week. Let's say it's a week. Get suspended for a week with no pay. You believe with four big umpires, in the case of Jordan Baker, he's like 6'8". So you got four umpires to separate two guys, one of which probably doesn't want to fight. And so you don't have any problems. Nobody gets sucker punched in the back of the head. Nobody gets spiked. Nobody like Mark Grace did when he charged them out in St. Louis. Nobody gets a separated shoulder. Nobody gets hurt at all. You don't lose your stars. We're in the business of protecting our stars in this game, which is why you can't collide with the catcher anymore, which is why you can't take the pivot man out at second base, which is why hitters are allowed to armor up the front elbow. And because we're trying to protect our stars, this is a way to protect your stars. What if Bryce Harper gets hit in the back of the head by somebody and he has vertigo or equilibrium problems and he can't hit for 2 months? You think the Nationals are going to be really happy about that? So the powers that be, whether it's Rob Manfred or anybody who's in charge of the rules, you make a third man in rule, and all of this ridiculous stuff with guys streaming in from the bullpen to get instantly mad at something they don't know anything about at that time, seems to me we've lost that. We're by that already. Let's get on with moving the game faster. They want to move the game faster, protecting our stars. They want to protect the stars. And what went on in Kansas City is kind of ridiculous. It's pretty much everybody's talking, nobody's doing anything, and then you get back to business, but you wasted 5 minutes. And you gave guys an opportunity to get hurt that wouldn't otherwise if you had the rule.
Yeah, Steve, that's a great point because in all the other professional leagues, you leave the bench and you're suspended. You know, it's not an automatic here, thing. You know, but not in Major League Baseball. Let's get the stone rule in effect.
Baseball, for whatever reason, baseball saying, well, the fans like to see this, so we'll continue doing it. But understand something. You know, these great arguments that managers used to have with umpires. They were terrific. They were entertaining. Mm-hmm. But now with video replay, you don't see near as many arguments. You see a few, but not even close. I mean, the legendary arguments with Earl Weaver and some of the other umpires around, they were brilliant and very entertaining. But now you just don't see it because we've evolved by that. So let's evolve into a situation. If we're going to make it a kinder, gentler game, and make no mistake, guys, this is a much gentler game than when I played it and the generation before me and the generation before them. This is something where we're protecting our stars now. There's not all that many of them. We got to make sure that we don't get them hurt. The game has dedicated itself to that, and this is just the next evolution.
Yeah. Steve, what do you make of Matt Davidson's power surge at Kauffman Stadium? He has 9 homers this year. 7 have come in KC.
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. And it's a question of a couple of different things. Number one, KC's pitching isn't too good. So that certainly factors into it. But also, you know, he got off to that fast start on opening day, and you couldn't predict it because it was god-awful cold, and the wind was blowing, and it was one of those days where the Sox had 6 home runs. They also hit 5 in the first game of the series in this particular series. So I don't know what it is about that hitting background. I think it's the fact that it's a combination of Kansas City pitching and maybe the Sox were just ready to hit. But as far as Matt is concerned, he's made some technical changes. He has changed things with hand position and the ability to bring the bat through the zone. So he is trying to get a whole lot better at what he does. He's enormously strong. So what happens is line drives that would be doubles for other people, they go out of the park for Matt. He doesn't have to worry about hitting the ball in one spot. He doesn't have to worry about pulling it. He can take it out in any part of the ballpark. He just loves the sight lines in Kansas City. Some guys have ballparks that they love. Some guys have some that they don't like so much. Matt really likes Kansas City.
Yeah, clearly. Hmm. And, you know, I want to go back to Tim Anderson for just a second. This is a very fun kid to watch. And I think, you know, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. This is a guy who is going to be a team leader. And I like the fact that he got in Kansas City set. And I know that it's easy pickings right now, as you pointed out. But, you know, this is a franchise that needs faces, that needs people to be standouts right now, especially in this media market where, you know, that you need to make a name for yourself. And I think this kid's going to be something to watch. And I'm excited. I'm probably most excited for him as I am for anybody on this team.
Well, look, you're watching something that's really interesting to me, especially because you're watching the confluence of a few different things coming together at one point. And that is, number one, the physical talent of Tim Anderson. Number two, the emotional talent of Tim Anderson, and also the growth as both a player and a human being. He went through some terrible times last year, and emotionally, it's tough to separate or compartmentalize. That's what people call it these days. And he lost a dear friend of his in the offseason to a shooting. It was horrible, and Tim had a hard time putting that behind him. Well, it is behind him now, and he understands the fragility of life, and he understands that it can all be taken away from you tomorrow, and he has his daughter, and he enjoys baseball. He gets a thrill out of it, and you're right, guys, he is going to be a leader of this team.
Yeah.
And watching him grow with Moncada in the shortstop second base dynamic, which is just unbelievable, and watching him grow as a human being over the last year has been something that I've truly enjoyed. Now, I think he has to get a little less careless at shortstop, and I think he will. Right now, he makes spectacular plays. Some of the routine plays have eluded him. But again, he's a young kid. He's going to get better and better. The talent is there. Now the emotional growth is there. And now everything that has become Tim Anderson, along with all of the instruction he's had and the fact that the Sox invested a number one draft pick in him, we're starting to see exactly why that is. I watch him on a daily basis get better and better. I watch him take control. I watch him hit. I watch him do the things that you have to do, and there's still a lot of room left. He's going to get a lot better, and then he's going to be exceptional. Right now, he's growing with Moncada. You know, that double play combination for every team is essential. These two guys are young. They're growing up together. And I think for the Sox, looking ahead, this is a pretty nice pair to have in the middle of the diamond.
Fun.
You know, you build your team from the catcher, the center fielder, and the shortstop and second baseman. Well, probably for growth purposes, we have the shortstop and second baseman. We fill in the other two positions eventually, and then you've got yourself really something.
All right. Steve Stone.
There you go.
See you tomorrow night. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks,
okay,
Steve.
Guys. Richard Rowe, take care. See you all guys right. later.
Thanks, buddy.
Forget about you, Kev. You're out.
That's fine.
All right. Right now, Judy tells us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news.